In early 2004, the American space agency NASA was struggling to recover from the loss of the space shuttle Columbia as it re-entered the Earth's atmosphere after an otherwise highly successful scientific mission. There was a major loss of public confidence in NASA, particularly after the publication of the investigation report into the accident. President Bush recognized the need to reinvigorate NASA and set a number of goals to challenge the nation. He set up a commission to recommend the way to achieve those goals. During the American spring of 2004, the nine commissioners traveled the United States, gathering the ideas of both experts and laypeople. The final hearings were held in New York. The last expert witness to appear was the administrator of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Under the United States government system, the heads of department are not career public servants. They are appointed directly by the president, although that appointment has to be ratified by Congress. During 2004, that administrator was Sean O'Keefe. He is introduced by Commission Chairman Pete Aldridge.
As most of you know, the administrator of NASA, Sean O'Keefe, leads the team and manages all of NASA's resources. Prior to his appointment at NASA, he served as Deputy Director of the Office of Management and Budget, the Secretary of the Navy, and Comptroller and Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Defense. At NASA, Sean certainly manages a complex system of systems, and we're most eager to hear his testimony today. Sean, welcome. Glad to have you here and look forward to hearing what you have to say.
It was then O'Keefe's turn to address the commissioners and the public audience.
It's important, I think, at this concluding stage to kind of step back a little bit and examine again what brought us all to this occasion. And in so many ways, the most cathartic moment that was a prompting event certainly became a searing event and a tragedy that prompted a lot of serious consideration was the loss of the shuttle Columbia. After the 1st of February 2003, the attempt from that point forward was certainly to examine the issues that led to that particular tragedy, to find the cause of the accident, correct it, and resume the activity that they had dedicated themselves to. But it became apparent in fairly short order when the Columbia Accident Investigation Board conducted its activities that the much broader question was to really seek a clarification of the space policy in a way that, in their view, as they articulated in their report, is something that had bedeviled us for the past 30-odd years. So since the end of the Apollo program, the definition and degree of clarity of the strategy of the broader space policy objectives had lacked the level of detail as well as a clear objective in their estimation, in the way they articulated it in their report released in August of 2003. The administration took that very seriously. The president very directly felt that there was an imperative that had been building over the course of their review and the course of their public reviews and testimony on the investigation of the Columbia accident to think in terms of the specific interagency activities, the functions we do within the federal government, and affected by space policy, and to bring together a coordinated approach in terms of how that should be managed. And in the course of roughly the midsummer through till December, the objective that he directed us to follow through on is to coordinate all those activities among us in the administration, the State Department, Defense, Commerce, Transportation, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, all of the stakeholders, if you will, in the policy objectives, to bring together a comprehensive set of options for his consideration. His engagement on the development of that set of policies was, in my judgment, having worked through a number of prior public service opportunities and looking at presidential directives and so forth, this was the most extensive I've seen any chief executive engaged on a matter of policy of this nature. And as a consequence, his guidance all the way through is what I think lent itself to the clarity of what ultimately emerged in this presidential directive. And the very clear instruction and direction of what was involved was a conscious set of choices that he made.
Then NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe's opening remarks to the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. O'Keefe then introduced one of his agency's public relations videos called A Renewed Spirit of Discovery. It featured President Bush's announcement of the Moon, Mars and Beyond vision for America's future in space.
And so in that spirit of rethinking exactly restating exactly how we arrived at this point, what I'd like to play, if you'd tolerate, Mr. Chairman, is a very short video that summarizes and drawn from the President's speech of the 14th of January, exactly how the components of this particular strategy should be assembled and what our objectives are, what we're directed to do, and how we then go about doing it. And if we could roll that 5-minute piece, I know somebody's got control over that right now.
It is time for America to take the next steps. Today, I announce a new plan to explore space and extend a human presence across our solar system. We will begin the effort quickly, using existing programs and personnel. We'll make steady progress. One mission, one voyage, one landing at a time. Our first goal is to complete the International Space Station by 2010. We will finish what we have started. We will meet our obligations to our 15 international partners on this project. We will focus our future research aboard the station on the long-term effects of space travel on human biology. Research on board the station and here on Earth will help us better understand and overcome the obstacles that limit exploration. Through these efforts, we will develop the skills and techniques necessary to sustain further space exploration. To meet this goal, we will return the space shuttle to flight as soon as possible, consistent with safety concerns and the recommendations of the Columbia Accident Investigation Board. The shuttle's chief purpose over the next several years will be to help finish assembly of the International Space Station. Our second goal is to develop and test a new spacecraft, the Crew Exploration Vehicle, by 2008 and to conduct the first manned mission no later than 2014. The Crew Exploration Vehicle will be capable of ferrying astronauts and scientists to the space station after the shuttle is retired. But the main purpose of this spacecraft will be to carry astronauts beyond our orbit to other worlds. Goal is to return to the moon by 2020 as the launching point for missions beyond. Beginning no later than 2008, we will send a series of robotic missions to the lunar surface to research and prepare for future human exploration. Using the Crew Exploration Vehicle, we will undertake extended human missions to the moon as early as 2015. With the goal of living and working there for increasingly extended periods of time. Returning to the moon is an important step for our space program. Establishing an extended human presence on the moon could vastly reduce the cost of further space exploration, making possible ever more ambitious missions. Also, the moon is home to abundant resources. Its soil contains raw materials that might be harvested and processed into rocket fuel or breathable air. We can use our time on the moon to develop and test new approaches and technologies and systems that will allow us to function in other more challenging environments. The moon is a logical step toward further progress and achievement. With the experience and knowledge gained on the moon, we will then be ready to take the next steps of space exploration, human missions to Mars and to worlds beyond. Robotic missions will serve as trailblazers, the advance guard to the unknown. Probes, landers, and other vehicles of this kind continue to prove their worth, sending spectacular images and vast amounts of data back to Earth. Yet the human thirst for knowledge ultimately cannot be satisfied by even the most vivid pictures or the most detailed measurements. We need to see and examine and touch for ourselves. And only human beings are capable of adapting to the inevitable uncertainties posed by space travel. As our knowledge improves, we'll develop new power generation, propulsion, life support, and other systems that can support more distant travels. We do not know where this journey will end, yet we know this. Human beings are headed into the cosmos. The vision I outlined today is a journey, not a race. We choose to explore space because doing so improves our lives and lifts our national spirit. So let us continue the journey.
President Bush announcing his Moon, Mars and Beyond initiative. After the station announcement, we will hear O'Keefe's comments on that presidential directive.
Pour yourself a coffee and pull up a seat. Join Lee for Coffee Chat every Monday morning from 9 till 11, with a range of guests and a wide variety of music for you to enjoy your Monday morning coffee, here on 88.3 Southern FM, Mondays from 9 till 11.
For this, our 78th Moon Mars special here on The Space Show, we are in New York at the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. NASA Administrator is about to comment on the presidential vision. Here's Sean O'Keefe.
Given that very clear, concise direction that even the public affairs folks can render into something that is a very direct manifestation of what the clarity is of what the president has charged, has really focused our attention in very broad and important ways. The objective, I've got a very brief presentation I can walk you through, and I will not labor you with each of the charts that are involved here, but just to highlight a couple of points. Hit the next slide, please, if you would. Again, the objective is to implement a sustained and affordable robotic and human presence in a variety of different approaches towards our exploration agenda. The debate back and forth as to whether or not there should be one versus the other is really clarified to a stage of looking at the broader set of objectives that could be achieved by a stepping stone approach, by advance robotic capabilities, and then as called for, the human characteristics that we bring to exploration objectives on a specific surface, as opposed to a severability between the two. And again, the specific objectives of what he has charged as part of that presidential directive is a promotion of international commercial participation, and indeed, to borrow a term that I think the Commission has used in a number of public hearings that you've been engaged in so far, to really develop a space industry, to focus on a much wider range of capabilities and change our view and typical approach that has been taken in the public sector and certainly from a government contracting standpoint of being the consumer of product or services to being more of a facilitator of entrepreneurial thinking of how we access capabilities in the broader space objectives. I think the trend and the least focus that each of you have articulated on that point is very attractive, very consistent with the strategy, and exactly the kind of thing that we seek your advice on how best to implement and to do it in a way that is likely to yield the result that, that has been spoken about. Next chart, please. Again, the objectives of what the President has articulated is exploration, and indeed, as the first bullet, the first objective, the first primary focus, this becomes a rather historic directive, if you will, and strategy and policy in its own right because exploration is at its core. And again, if I had to point to any one aspect of what is clearly embodied in this presidential directive that was manifest in the President's thinking and his direction to us from the beginning when we first assembled to the end, it was this is the point. It is the act of exploration in and of itself that is the goal. And how you achieve those objectives and how you determine exactly where they should be pursued becomes matters of extreme consequence and importance. But nonetheless, it must be the human desire to want to explore that we are essentially responding to with an approach like this. Extension of human presence, again, is a range of opportunities that can be presented therein that, again, follow a broader robotic capability that therefore advances those circumstances. Innovation, I just touched on a moment ago, and I think, again, the Commission is way ahead in the thinking in terms of the direction where we need to be thinking innovatively how we do this to the point of changing the roles and relationships that we typically have considered in terms of what is a public-private sector kind of focusing, and as well as partnering arrangements. There is, again, on this aspect, and I hope that the sense you've gotten from what I understand of the public testimony from our international partners is there is great enthusiasm for wanting to pursue the next stages of exactly how do we specify that. That's what I've heard from them in private discussions. And certainly as a consequence of the very ambitious structure that has been created in the International Space Station program, the infrastructure is there to do this, as well as the relationships, the communication network, the engineering teams, top to bottom. This is a very well-coordinated process now. And in developing the interest from the primary partners who have been engaged in the International Space Station certainly would be the easiest to begin to pursue early, and that indeed is where the earliest indication of interest is of developing partnering arrangements as we move forward. The remarkable difference, I think, in this one, and again, it's an aspect that seems to dominate some of the current public debate, is this is not an Apollo-like program. For some reason, this is not being construed at times as why would we need to pursue something at such a breakneck circumstance and a crash program in order to respond to what? Well, it's a question in pursuit of a problem because it doesn't exist. That's not the objective that's being articulated here. This is very much a program that is, again, a journey, not a race. It is not driven by an imperative to either win or avoid the consequences of not winning. That's not the point. That's not what this is about, and that's not what it would conceive this particular objective. And so as a result, it really focuses on, I think, an issue that the Commission has, again, opined about as well, that we look to you for various for advice on how we may achieve this to make it a sustainable kind of effort over extended periods of time. I think the way the strategy was constructed very specifically, it was designed for the purpose of having a longer-term set of objectives that would be carried out.
NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe at the final session of the Moon, Mars, and Beyond Commission.
And the second major feature is it must be, by definition, affordable. And therefore, again, not a crash program that requires massive investment or even large investments. This is more that should be very much in line with the approach that, and I'll speak to that here in a little more detail in just a moment. And then I think at the core of this is a point that was very evident to, I think, those of us who participated in the assembly of the vision and the strategy and the options that the president ultimately chose from, is that business as usual, if we simply try to overlay this on top of an existing structure, isn't going to work. That's not what we're about doing. There is no way that the present organizational structure and how we do business today will be the most appropriate way to go about doing this. Could it be achieved? Sure, with a fair amount of coercion, insistence, axle grease, steam, a few other things, it might be possible. But that's not what the intent is here. The objective really has to be to look at a transformative model that facilitates and doesn't force this as a function for the purpose of achieving this strategy. And that's an approach, again, that I've been very, very gratified to hear that the kind of discussion that the commissioners have taken on this question has been extensive, and really thinking through what are the specifics of how we would achieve that kind of effort. And the discussion that we've had, that you've offered to us, to spend time thinking through what some of those organizational alternatives has been extremely beneficial, and we thank you for that, because it really helped move the ball forward in that direction as well. So again, in order to achieve it, we must set priorities, and that's clearly what the president's vision does, fundamentally transform, and in so many ways, again, exploring different approaches with you, and your tolerance of hearing those alternatives and offering different viewpoints on how we may pursue that has been helpful, as well as fostering national capabilities of what exist outside of NASA, within the broader federal expanse, as well as through commercial and international options.
Much of what O'Keefe had to say was about finance and fulfilling policy directives. After speaking for 40 minutes, he made these closing remarks.
And finally, I would just simply conclude with the manner in which I started. So much of what prompted this, I think, a very deeper consideration of where our space policy should go, the strategy that we should carry out, what the objective should be, and indeed the quest for exploration, was tragically as a consequence of the loss of seven really remarkable people. Their legacy as a consequence of this is what motivates me every day to be thinking about the imperative that we get this right. And in so many respects, they took the risk of the broader cause of exploration in so many ways that is the manifest of the president's comments just days after the accident. Exploration is not an option we choose. It is a desire written in the human heart.
NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe, speaking at the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. At least he was administrator at the time of these hearings. It's not often that one has the chance to cross-examine the administrator, and the nine commissioners were not about to let this opportunity slip them by. That grilling after this announcement.
Gymnastics is a sport for people of all ages and abilities. Gymnastics promotes a healthy lifestyle, increasing fitness and energy levels. In conjunction with the Heart Foundation of Australia, Gymnastics Victoria recommends healthy eating for peak performance. To find out more about your local club, telephone Gymnastics Victoria on 9214 6020 or browse through the website at www.vic.gymnastics.org.au.
Given the drubbing his agency had been given in 2002 and 2003, NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe was looking and sounding pretty relaxed as he awaited questioning from the members of the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. At the time of this hearing in 2004 May, the space shuttle was still grounded following the Columbia accident. Commission Chairman Pete Aldridge commented on this. He asks what NASA was doing to get the shuttle flying again and on O'Keefe's view on the way NASA should go forward.
I got one question. We'll open it up. I am really worried about uncertainty here. I read what's going on in Congress and I get really bothered. They yelled at you for not having a vision, and now you got one. Well, tell us, you know, you're not giving us enough information. And I know there's some things you could be doing in 2004 that could get you steered on this vector, and they're not letting you do that. And it's not even clear that the funding available in 2005 may be there. So that's one uncertainty. The other uncertainty is that suppose we can't get the shuttle flying as early as we would like, and so the sand chart the infamous sand chart starts delaying the time in which you can get the space station finished, and the money started funding into the exploration. Could you address those two concerns of uncertainty?
Well, in somewhat of a Churchillian twist, you know, this is one of the messiest processes going, but it's the best one that's out there. You know, I mean, it's a variation of that theme. And again, I think your history and recounting of it is precisely right, Mr. Chairman. I still have the ringing in my ears of lots of members of the Accident Investigation Board, members of Congress, lots of committees, all insisting that it was time, necessary, absolutely imperative that there be a direction articulated, and not just by anybody. It had to be the President of the United States.
Yeah.
They were very specific about this. They didn't even leave room for margin of how it would be delivered. And you know, lots of interest on how the process shook out and who was involved and lots of alternative and competing views. All of it was had. All of it was engaged in. There was just no end of hearings of different ideas. And some, and the ideas ranged from very interesting to not quite as interesting. Okay, but they were all vetted. Everything was on the table.
Most of what Akif said in further response to Aldridge's question related to specifics about the shuttle recovery plan and are no longer relevant given the shuttle's successful operations since then. Commissioner Neil Tyson is an astrophysicist and a director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York. He has moved to comment on how, from publicly available material, he does not understand NASA's plans for the future. This prompts Akif to explain how he became NASA administrator. Now, we explained earlier in this program how, unlike Australia, heads of government agencies are not career civil servants, but presidential political appointments.
Sean, I spent my life in academia and in education.
And I'm envious. Don't.
I'm not trying to rub it in. I'm just trying to say that whenever I see something as clear as the information in these NASA brochures, which is clearer than other NASA brochures, I mean. No, but the budget, the layout, what gets phased in, what gets phased out, and then I read in the newspapers bipartisan puzzlement over the steps that need puzzlement over what NASA plans to do. I just don't understand what's wrong. Either there's some cognitive problem on Capitol Hill, or maybe
welcome
there's
to my world.
See, I can say that, but Bob can't because he's from Congress. Or I wonder if there's another thing going on here. Maybe to say, well, we're not sure about what you're doing here is not so much that they don't understand these charts. Maybe they just simply don't believe the charts. Maybe NASA's legendary spending past is coming back to haunt what is fundamentally a sound vision, but now we have to sort of empty all that baggage and show that there's nothing hidden within it. So I just like you to comment on that, and whether in retrospect perhaps the vision should have not been so fiscally responsible. Maybe you should have said, let's double NASA's budget, then everyone would see, well, of course you can get the vision done with that much more money. So then there'd be no debate here about whether it could happen for that much money, and no one would think anything was hidden. So I'm wondering if you could just comment on whether it's just a disbelief given NASA's historical spending habits.
Dr. Tyson, I think there's something to that. The credibility of this agency has been tested on several occasions. Indeed, I don't fashion myself as having been a natural pick for this capacity. Indeed, it came around as a consequence of 2 days after Inauguration Day, the revelation that there was a $5 billion overrun on the International Space Station just kind of showed up. So within a year thereafter, it was in a position where, having looked at lots of other alternatives, The alternative was, it's necessary to send someone to NASA with a capacity or at least some passing background at understanding what the resource management challenges are of running a large organization. I barely fit that criteria, but that's ultimately why that occurred. I don't fit the usual pattern of why various selections have been made in the past in terms of the kind of competencies in engineering and technology and scientific community. I fit none of those categories. So it has been as a consequence of that very point, and the credibility of this agency has been tested, no question, in the past. That said, I've worked tirelessly for the last 2 years to do everything and anything we can think of in order to restore that credibility. And it is nonetheless a long, long haul. It's not something that gets done overnight. And it's not something that gets done by the appointment of anyone or any group of people. It's got to be a sustained effort over time. And the approach that we've taken is to look at, again, things like the International Space Station, the variety of different programs that have certainly in the course of my tenure there, to have a sense of understanding of what those resource demands are, to be very clear about what you know them to be, and to not make it up when you don't. And so part of what has certainly been a potential contributor to the credibility problem is the propensity on my part to say, I don't know when I really don't. And I think that's a more important approach that we have adopted than trying to say, well, what answer would you like? Okay, and that's an approach that we simply have not adhered to in the course of my tenure.
Moon Mars Commissioner Maria Zuba has had a lot of experience in unmanned planetary exploration. The Professor of Geophysics and Planetary Sciences at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, she has been involved in more than half of NASA's planetary missions. There is a lot of competition among scientists to get NASA funding for their pet mission idea. Who gets that funding is partly decided by a committee of their scientific peers. As Zuba notes, she has been on many such committees. She is also aware that the Moon Mars Initiative appears to be heavily slanted towards manned space missions rather than unmanned ones. She expresses her concerns about the way scientific objectives are established within NASA.
Sean, shortly after the President's speech, there were significant parts of the scientific community that felt disenfranchised from the vision. And part of it, as we can tell, is that there is now a strategic focus within NASA. And some of the complaints that we heard had to do with, well, we've had years and years of committee reports in which we've laid out objectives for the most scientifically important things to do. And now this new vision, if it's going to be implemented in the way that the President suggests, is throwing all of that away and starting something else. And as the dust begins to settle and people start to see what's really associated with the vision, it seems to many of us anyway that there are great opportunities for the future. But I'm wondering if maybe the way that we've thought about the process of selecting NASA-based science maybe needs to be relooked, because it's always... In the way we've done it before, on all of these committees, of which all of us here on the panel have served on many of them, have all started saying you have to pick a scientific question, and then you have to figure out how to do it. Whereas what is happening with this vision is that it's really creating capabilities to go out and explore in ways that you haven't done before. So maybe all of these scientific advisory committees really need to go press Control-Alt-Delete and go back and start to think about what kind of science you would do if you had capabilities that you didn't have before. And so maybe we need to start thinking strategically about the way that we're doing our science within NASA.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think you've just hit the nail on the head. And this is the first part of the scientific agenda, and it will not change, should continue to be pose the questions. What are the things we really are looking for answers to? What are the issues that should guide the kind of exploration focus that we see and utilize those capabilities and capacity to go seek answers to those enduring questions? That is an invaluable aspect of, I think, what the scientific community has done and I'm certain will continue to do, given the right challenge and motivation and interest. What is different on this, and again, I think you've got it exactly right, and I would hope that it would be viewed as liberating, but instead it's been viewed a slightly different way, which I find curious. But I would hope it would be viewed liberating as to then not ask scientists to then assume the role of being program managers. Well, I thought you were scientists, okay? I mean, that the objective was to pose the science questions, lay out the science agenda, but then to say, okay, that's it, you have to move over here and conduct the program management effort, is what has led to some of the challenges I think Dr. Tyson referred to. That's a Herculean expectation on the part of anybody to transcend disciplines and to be able to navigate very widely and freely into a range of those kinds of capabilities. So part of what is being created here, I think, is the capacity, the capability, the talent to look at this as a system of systems challenge, a systems integration challenge. How do I assemble pieces and parts to go carry out this objective? To answer those questions. And then have the scientists do and focus on what is really an extraordinary contribution, which is, what are the questions, how do I go about answering them, what is the discipline I need to put to gathering what information to achieve that? It really becomes quite an efficient way of looking at the challenge. I'll give you one very narrow example that I found to be, it turns the argument very dramatically, and it's the kind of thing we've got to duplicate, I think, across the board. Most, as I understand it, members of the scientific community have looked at a range of deep space exploration objectives in the past, have found that one of the limiting features always has been, fine, pose the science question, tell us what the research model is, tell us what it is you're attempting to understand, what information you have to gather, how do you do it. Oh, by the way, you'll be restricted to an amount of power during the course of the flight that will equate to nothing like this, 260-watt light bulbs. That's it. Go away, you know, best of luck, and I hope you can work out the package. That's usually been the charge, because that's the limit of the energy draw that we can afford to do given conventional technology capacity that we employ for deep space exploration missions, which have to be in a very, very low power generation mode for extended periods of time, and then activated years later to then generate as necessary in order to garner the scientific information and evidence that the scientist devised in the first place. Well, number one, if you span of time, you've really defined an extremely difficult problem that most scientists then become finding themselves in the role of being really good engineers of trying to devise. Well, what if we changed that and said, don't worry about the power requirements. We'll give you 100% more. I'm sorry, 100 times more than what you're currently dealing with right now. And your challenge is to try to find a means to fit within a very limited mass, volume, spatial distribution, but no other challenge than that. You tell us what you can do and give us the range of options of what you think you could fit within that. Suddenly it's liberating. That's what Project Prometheus is all about. That's what that whole effort has been dedicated to do in the last year and a half, is to look at power generation and propulsion capabilities that liberate the scientific community from being engineers and liberates engineers to start looking at those challenges in ways that comply with how do you deliver on capability that's demanded, as opposed to thinking like, what do I do in order to mollify the scientists who want more data, research, evidence, whatever. It really puts folks into their expertise wheelhouses much more efficiently by this mode.
Mm-hmm. Michael.
Then NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe speaking on the final day of public hearings at the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. On our next Space Show special, we shall bring you the views of New York's public on the initiative by President Bush. This has been Program 78 in a series written and edited by Andrew Rennie using recordings made available to Southern FM by the Commission. Well, that's the Space Show for this week. I'm Andrew Rennie, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. But right now, it's over to Purple Haze, Nick Black, and a special guest.
There's a magic in the music through the day and night time too. You've a friend who'll play your music. We can bring it.
The best blend of music, community news and views. The Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.